If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you'll hear Seth chat with the disaster artist Seth Rogen, who answers a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump is pulling out all the stops to help elect an accused sexual predator in tomorrow's special election in Alabama, and that's because Roy Moore and Donald Trump have a lot in common, up to and including the fact that they're both wildly unfit for office. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. For most people, self-care usually involves eating well, getting some exercise, or staying off social media. For Donald Trump, it means periodically holding a rally to bask in the warm embrace of his supporters and relive the 2016 election, as he did yet again on Friday in Florida.
The great state of Florida, where we had a tremendous victory, didn't we? Michigan hadn't been won in many, many years by a Republican. We went to Wisconsin, hadn't been won in many, many years. And her husband supposedly said, "You better go to Wisconsin." And she said, no, my bunch of dummies, a bunch of dummies. Do you remember? There is no way for Donald Trump to get 270. We heard that for week after week, and we won.
Oh, my God, get over it, man. Trump is like a guy who threw one touchdown in high school and tells the story to everybody who comes into his bar. He's the Buddy Garrity of American politics. Of course, our current catch-22 is this. Is it better for Trump to obsess over his election win or to focus on and potentially mishandle the North Korean nuclear crisis? He's clearly more comfortable talking about his win, as evidenced by the fact that he briefly mentioned North Korea and then immediately veered off his prepared remarks to undercut himself.
As part of a campaign of maximum pressure on the vile dictatorship of North Korea, we have imposed the toughest ever sanctions passed by the United Nations Security Council, and we have a lot of other sanctions. But, you know, I don't know that sanctions are going to work with him. We got to give it a shot. You know, we'll see. Who knows? I just tell you, folks, you're in good hands. That's all I can say.
You can't say you're in good hands right after a sentence that makes it clear we're not in good hands. That's like saying, "I'm good to drive," and then sticking your keys into the gas tank. Now, at the very least, you might be reassured by the fact that our allies like NATO have our back in a potential crisis, but Trump has gone out of his way to pick fights with those allies over what he falsely claims is their refusal to pay for military assistance, a line he repeated on Friday.
I told the people of NATO, standing right behind me while they were standing behind me, they've been delinquent. They haven't been paying. I said, "You gotta pay, you gotta pay." And I guess I implied, if you don't pay, we're out of there, right? So we'll have a nation that doesn't pay, then the nation gets frisky with whoever.
Gets frisky. Our president refers to war the same way your grandparents refer to sex. You know, after a couple of sherries, Russia can get pretty frisky. Of course, for Trump, the substance of the speech is itself meaningless compared to the validation he receives from the crowd. So naturally, his fragile ego was once again bruised when a reporter for the Washington Post, Dave Weigel, tweeted a photo of the arena where Trump spoke with many empty seats. Now, Weigel quickly deleted the tweet after realizing it was misleading, but that didn't stop Trump from whining about it on Twitter, writing, "Dave Weigel, Washington Post, put out a phony photo of an empty arena hours before I arrived. Demand apology and retraction from fake news Washington Post." And Weigel, in return, did the stand-up thing. Apologized, tweeting, "I apologize. It was a bad tweet on my personal account, not a story for Washington Post. I deleted it after like 20 minutes. Very fair to call me out." So there you go. Trump demanded a retraction and apology, got a retraction and apology, which I'm sure he accepted with grace. And I'm just kidding, our colicky man-baby president wouldn't shut the hell up about it.
President Trump called for his dismissal. Quote, "Dave Weigel of the Washington Post just admitted that his picture was a fake fraud, showing an almost empty arena last night for my speech in Pensacola, when in fact he knew the arena was packed, as shown also on TV. Fake news, he should be fired."
You know, I'm not sure getting fired for false tweets is really a precedent you, of all people, want to set. I mean, if tweeting something incorrect was a fireable offense, you would have had to have given your inaugural address while holding a cardboard box full of your stuff. "Well, it's great to be here, but I've been fired." But this goes to the very heart of Trump's worldview. One set of rules for him and the people closest to him, another set of rules for everyone else. If you're an immigrant or a minority and Trump thinks you broke the law, he only wants to punish you. If you're a white man close to him who's been accused of a crime, Trump thinks you deserve leniency. If you're a reporter and you make a mistake, Trump wants you fired. But if you're Trump or one of his acolytes, you get to lie brazenly with impunity. Reporters are human. Human beings make mistakes. The difference is, when reporters get something wrong, they're accountable, take responsibility for those mistakes. Trump lies as often as he breathes, and yet, when asked if he's ever made a mistake, said only this.
"That notion of forgiveness, that's not a central..."
"Well, I try not to make mistakes where I have to ask for forgiveness, for one thing."
"The idea of repentance, is that something that's important to you?"
"I think repenting is terrific.
But do you feel the need to?"
"I mean, why do I have to, you know, repent? Why do I have to ask for forgiveness if you're not making mistakes?"
I would love to see Trump in a confessional. "Forgive me, Father, but I nailed it again. Another perfect week. Zero Hail Marys and zero Our Fathers. In the name of the Donald, the Trump, and the holy me. You're welcome for my grace." Trump constantly lashes out of the media, even though he seems to spend so much of his time watching cable news. In fact, in a behind-the-scenes account of Trump's daily routine, the New York Times reported over the weekend that Trump spends at least 4 hours a day and sometimes as much as twice that in front of a television. 8 hours! Who's letting him watch that much TV? Even Netflix checks in on you after 3 hours. But the most important takeaway from this article is the shocking degree to which Trump is temperamentally and emotionally unfit for office, and the degree to which he's in over his head, which brings us back to that rally in Florida. Even though it wasn't in Alabama, the main theme of the rally was Trump's full-throated support for a candidate who is just as unfit for office as he is, Roy Moore. Alabama's special election is tomorrow, and Trump used the rally once again as an opportunity to urge his supporters to back Moore and accuse child molester. At one point, he even repeated his support for Moore at the urging of someone in the crowd.
"This guy's screaming, 'We want Roy Moore.' He's right. Just so I can satisfy this gentleman out there. How many people here are from the great state of Alabama? Whoa. So get out and vote for Roy Moore."
He's taking requests from the crowd now. "We don't have a president, we have a radio DJ. You're listening to Donnie in the Morning. This next one goes out to Roy Moore, and it's called Banned from the YMCA." Now, Trump and Moore have a lot in common, including their penchant for conspiracy theories, alleged sexual predation, and the fact that they're both grossly unfit for office. Let's not forget that even before the allegations against Moore surfaced, he was removed from office twice for disobeying court orders, said homosexual conduct should be illegal, and said Muslims should be barred from serving in Congress. And like Trump, he also seems to be an admirer of Vladimir Putin. In August, Moore was asked about a quote from Ronald Reagan who said Russia was a focus of evil in the modern world and said this.
He said that Russia was the focus of evil in the modern world.
You could say that very well about America, couldn't you?
Do you think?
Well, we promote a lot of bad things, you know.
Like?
Same-sex marriage.
That's the very argument that Vladimir Putin makes.
Well, then maybe Putin is right. Maybe he's more akin to me than I know.
What would you say to him?
Здравствуйте, как вы поживаете сегодня?
It's pretty alarming when a guy slips into fluent Russian and it isn't even the most sinister part of the clip. Is Roy Moore a character on The Americans? It would make sense. He dresses the way a Russian would think Americans dress. Dmitry, you. Here is cowboy hat, Dmitry. Wear this, become judge. Is this a good way of talking? Yes, Dmitry, that is Southern talk. I don't like homosexuals. Very good, Dmitry, very convincing. So you got Donald Trump, the president, and the leader of the Republican Party enthusiastically supporting Roy Moore, two accused sexual predators and outspoken admirers of Vladimir Putin, one a wannabe authoritarian strongman, the other a lawless theocrat, and in other words, a
bunch of dummies.
This has been A Closer Look.
Ryan Reese, audience warrant comedian for Late Night with Seth Meyers here with Stephanie from New York, who just came from a live taping. Holiday season is upon us, and the president has said the American people can expect a huge tax cut as a Christmas present.
False.
The...
Sorry, wait.
Do you feel he will come through on this promise?
That's a negative. From everything that I've been hearing, the breakdowns, and knowing that I used to be middle class and probably won't be middle class anymore as a veteran, it sucked to hear it.
What do you think about the president's endorsement of Roy Moore?
It's scary. I'm not a parent, but I have nieces and nephews, and to think that any part of what he's been accused of doing is okay, and that we would give him more power to rule over anyone is unfathomable to me. And the fact that the president is actually endorsing this behavior and this man is a scary, scary future ahead.
Thanks so much for your opinion,
Stephanie.
It was
Stephanie. A pleasure. Thank you.
It.
You were awesome.
Have a good one.
You too.
Here at Late Night, every night, I deliver a monologue comprised of jokes written by a diverse team of writers. As a result, a lot of jokes come across my desk that, due to my being a straight white male, would be difficult for me to deliver. But we don't think that should stop you from enjoying them, so we'd like to share them with you in a segment called Joke Seth Can't Tell. These are two of our writers, everybody. That's Amber, that's Jenny.
I'm black.
And I'm gay.
And we're both women.
And I'm not. So here's how this works. I'll read the setups for these jokes, and Amber and Jenny will read the punchlines. All right, here we go. Toy company Mattel recently posted a photo on Instagram of Barbie wearing a pro-gay marriage t-shirt.
Barbie, or as lesbians call her, Barb.
A group in Georgia hosted an event last month called Come Meet a Black Person.
Or as it's more commonly known, jury duty.
Conservatives are accusing Starbucks of promoting a gay agenda for releasing holiday cups with an image of two interlinked hands.
Said lesbians, that's not what we do with our hands.
Jenny!
No, I didn't mean that.
All
right. I meant sex stuff.
Oh. After attending a party in blackface, a Virginia sheriff's deputy has been reassigned.
To president of the police.
The next one is about Puerto Ricans. Jenny, you're Puerto Rican. You want to take this one?
Sure.
All right, here we go. According to reports, over 200,000 Puerto Ricans have moved to Florida following Hurricane Maria.
200,000 Puerto Ricans, or as it's also known, a barbecue.
According to a new poll, 59% of Americans believe that the U.S. is currently undergoing the lowest point in its history.
Said black people, I can think of a lower one.
Oh, so you're talking about...
Yes, when they canceled Living Single.
Oh. One of the films currently under consideration for Best Foreign Film for the 2018 Academy Awards is a lesbian horror film.
It's called Out of Batteries. I know, right? Terrifying.
Terrible.
A Texas man recently avoided arrest by swimming away from police officers.
Authorities are currently on the lookout for not a black man.
Shalane Flanagan recently became the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon in 40 years, running the race in 2 hours, 26 minutes, and 53 seconds.
It's the fastest a woman has ever run without a senator behind her.
Hey, Seth!
What?
Why don't you tell
one? Oh, I don't think I should tell one.
Oh, come on,
I feel like if I tell one, I'll get in trouble for it.
Oh, come on, just do it.
Okay. According to a recent report, gay men earn more money than straight men because straight men work, but gay men work!
Seth! How dare you!
You told me it would be okay!
You should be ashamed of yourself!
Black women and lesbians are liars! You know our guest tonight from such movies as Knocked Up, Neighbors, and The Interview. His latest film, The Disaster Artist, which is based on the cult movie The Room, just received a Golden Globe nomination. It's in theaters now. Please welcome back to the show, Seth Rogen, everyone.
Welcome back, man.
Thank you.
Great to see you.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations. This film nominated for a Golden Globe yesterday.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And for those who don't know, this is based on the making of an actual film called The Room.
Yeah, there's a movie called The Room, not Room with Brie Larson, which is a great movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jacob Tremblay is darling and emotionally available. But this is a movie called The Room with Tommy Wiseau, who James Franco plays. He wrote it, directed it, stars in it, produced it, financed it himself, marketed it himself. And it is known for being one of the worst movies of all time.
Yeah.
And it's so bad that it actually developed like a cult following. And people like me started seeing it with their friends and telling people to see it. And it became kind of like a Rocky Horror Picture Show-esque experience where it was kind of interactive with the audience and they would participate in kind of just the glory of how absolutely ridiculously terrible it is. To the point that people start liking it, though. And honestly, like, I've watched it so many times, I kind of love it. And we made a whole movie about it. And there's something great about it. And because you keep watching it. Like, and if it was bad, you're like, why am I watching this over and over again? Why have I seen this more than I've seen, like, good movies? And so, yeah, it's endlessly fascinating subject.
Who introduced it to you? It came out in 2003. Did you see it pretty early on, do you think?
Yeah, I saw about a year and a half maybe after it came out. Paul Rudd, I think, was the first one who mentioned it to me, and he had seen it. And then I went and saw it with my wife, who I was dating at the time, and Jonah Hill and Ed Helms, actually.
Wow.
At the Sunset Lemley 5. And it was mostly empty, and there was just kind of people starting to interact with it. But it's catastrophically, bizarrely bad.
So I knew about the movie. I hadn't seen it, but I used to, when I would visit L.A., you would see this billboard. And
yes.
So this billboard was up for a while.
Years. And that's the marketing I was referring to. Tommy paid to keep that up. It had a website, theroommovie.com. There was a phone number, and you would call it, and you didn't need to, because you could just go to the theater and buy tickets. And the phone number was just Tommy's phone number, and he would just answer the phone and just say, like, are you coming to movie? And he would be like, yeah, I'm coming to movie. And he'd be like, great, see you there. And that was the entirety of the interaction. And there was also, he ran TV commercials really late at night that I'd seen a few of, and I asked him about it, and he said, they were on so late at night, they were free. And that, like, it was literally at a time where there was just nothing else. So they let him put his ridiculous ads up for his movie.
It's fantastic. You were a producer on the film from the start,
yeah.
But then you decided to play a part. We saw the part you were playing there in the clip. How did you decide to play that character?
Oh, he was like the only guy around my age, I think, was a.
You're making producing sound very
exactly.
Easy.
Exactly. Yeah. It was. And I played Sandy Schlaer is his name, and he was the script supervisor of The Room, and kind of, sort of directed it a little bit. As you can see, he kind of like calls action and helps with the lines, and he later claimed he directed the movie, which shows what a weird thing it is, because it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
So. This guy's taking credit for it. Like, we're suing, hoarding the credit for creating something that is only famous because it's bad. It's so weird. It's a very weird thing. Yeah.
Do you think Tommy, looking back, is happy? Obviously, this film has succeeded to the place where it's being adapted by all these great actors and writers and directors, but it was not what he set out to make.
No, and that is, like, an interesting moment to me, is, like, he did have to kind of readjust what his goal was. He had to pretend his goal was to make a ridiculous comedy, whereas his goal was really to make, like, a heartfelt drama. But his goal was also to become a famous movie star, which he kind of is now in some way, and a famous filmmaker, which he kind of is now in some way. James Franco plays him in the movie. He wanted Johnny Depp, but we got James Franco. But what's weird is, like, he seems, I was just looking at him at the premiere. It was a big premiere, and, like, a lot of famous people are there. A lot of famous people are in the movie. And he is behaving in such a way as though he always expected it to happen. And, like, I would say, just like, my only other experience is I played Steve Wozniak in a movie, and, like, that guy invented computers, and he was blown away we were making a movie about him. Like, he couldn't believe it. This guy made the worst movie of all time, and it's as though not only was he expecting a movie to be made about him, he's a little pissed. It's like it wasn't 5 years ago, basically. Yeah. And that Johnny Depp isn't playing him, and instead James Franco is. He's a weird dude.
You saw him before even you began to talk about adapting a story. You would see him in L.A. You saw him at grocery stores?
I'd see him in Whole Foods. Me and Jonah actually would shop at the same Whole Foods, and he first saw him there and sent me a picture of him, like, in front of, like, Cantaloupes with Tommy. And I was like, oh, my God. And I would keep my eye out, open for him. And then I saw him one time, and I took a picture with him, and then years later, when we were making the movie, he, like, instantly, you take picture with me one time at grocery store. You big fan of mine. You real big fan of mine. You like me. Yeah, Tommy.
He had to settle for James playing him. James is fantastic.
He's amazing in the
movie. Now, James is interesting because Tommy seems to just be weird. James is normal, but then has a great capacity for weirdness.
Yes, he does.
And he directed the film, did a beautiful job, but is it true that he stayed in character?
He did stay in character the whole time we were making the movie. As Tommy, he would speak in the Tommy voice, and he was in prosthetic makeup, and he's directing the movie. And it's probably the first time anyone's ever directed a movie in character.
You hear about the other.
Yeah, you don't.
Like, actors stay in character, but for a director to stay in character.
And in the movie, he's directing a movie. So it's also weird. it was really strange. And I would warn everyone who came to the set, because a lot of actors have small roles in the movie. And I would be like, before you step on set, this is not a normal situation you're stepping into. Like, it's super weird. Like, James is in character, and you never know if he's... And he's directing the movie in the movie, and we're shooting scenes in the movie where he's directing a movie. And I was just like, just go with it, man. Like, just ride it out. And everyone was very cool. It confused my grandmother, though. She just didn't... She came to set and talked to James for, like, 10 minutes, and she'd met him many times, and then he walked away, and she's like, where's James Franco? And, like... I was thinking, like, do I even try to explain what's happening? And then I was just like, James isn't here today.
There are fantastic cameos throughout the film.
Yeah, many.
A lot of very funny people.
Yeah.
Including Nathan Fielder.
Yes.
Who I'm a huge fan of.
Me too. He's brilliant.
You guys grew up together in Vancouver.
We went to elementary school and high school together, and we were on the high school improv team together.
This is a great photo of, it seems like these are normal dudes here.
Yeah.
There's... Nathan sort of creep, and you very set,
oh, yeah.
set out
it,
from...
It,
yeah. it, look,
it looks like I'm planning the murder thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks like it's a horror movie, and you've like this part's been folded under for years.
Yeah, right, and then...
There's a moment where they reveal it, and it's like, Seth's there. It's looking super creepy for no reason.
Yeah, the detective folds it over and is like, we need to find that guy.
There's that one.
This is also an era, I can tell you about every one of these kids in this picture. That was each one of them, that was the only tie they owned.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And that was our thing as an improv team.
Oh,
we wore ties.
Wow. What was Nathan like as an improviser?
He was funny. He was always very funny, and he played up the uncomfortable. That was kind of his thing, was making things very uncomfortable, which he's continued to make an incredible career of.
He has become perfect at that.
Yeah, his show's brilliant, and I have nothing to do with it, but if you haven't seen it, I recommend checking it out.
No, it's nice to have somebody come on and plug something they have nothing,
to do with. Yeah, exactly. I got a lot of stuff of my own. I don't need
Congrats on the film.
Thank you. It's always great.
Hey, this is Kevin, one of the producers here at Late Night. We're backstage with Seth Rogen, who's going to take a couple more questions in the dressing room here. Seth, I was reading that you found out about the book from James Franco when you guys were doing the interview, when you were shooting the interview. Did you read it then, or was he just telling you about it? Were you in talks with Tommy then during that process?
He was just telling me about it, and I had seen the movie, and he actually hadn't even seen the movie. He's the only nerd who actually read the book before seeing the movie. Yeah, and then later, then he was saying, I want to make this into a movie, and I knew enough about it to just say, like, yeah, that sounds incredible. And then later, as we started developing it, I read it.
And working with Tommy must have been a trip every day. I heard that he was contractually obligated to shoot a scene in the movie, but he had a specific idea of what he wanted to do.
He demanded he be in a scene with James, who was playing him, which was prohibitive to some degree because Tommy is unmistakable for anyone other than Tommy, and James was playing Tommy, so it was inevitably going to wind up in a situation where there was two Tommies in a given scene, but he would not budge on that, and so we filmed the scene with him and James, but contractually we didn't have to use it, and then later we needed more music cleared for the movie. And he was like, how is my scene a movie? And we were like, it's not in the movie. And he's like, well, if you want to clear the music, you have to put the scene in the movie. But he didn't say it had to be in the main body of the movie. So it's kind of like a Marvel, like, post-credits tag.
Yeah, stay through the end of the movie to get to see that.
It's bizarre.
Did he have ideas for what he could look like in the movie?
Yeah, he drew there was a picture of him that he sent that he took of himself. He was clearly in like a Lens Crafters or something like that because he was wearing just like glassless frames and you could see behind him like on the wall of glasses. And he had a mustache drawn on his face by hand with like a pen, like a Bic pen. And he sent a picture of him with these like lensless glasses and a Bic pen mustache. And he's like, this is how I consider, this is how I want my look to be in movie. He's like, don't worry, though. For real filming, I draw mustache on better. I use Sharpie. Yeah. I use real felt pen.
Oh, he was going to use a pen for the movie anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was still going to use a pen, just a better pen.
James hosted SNL last week.
Yeah.
You guys showed up and were in the show. How was that being back on the show last week?
It's nice. I would say that's like the best gig on SNL is being like a little surprise guest.
Yeah.
Because you don't go all week. You just show up on Saturday.
Yeah.
You kind of get all the glory of hosting without actually hosting. You get, you know, and then, it's great.
Great. Are you shooting a movie now? What's the next thing for you?
I'm shooting a movie that has no title currently. Sorry, I'm eating an almond. with Charlize Theron. It's like a romantic comedy, an R-rated romantic comedy. And so that's going well, I think.
Uh-huh.
We have a show, Future Man, on Hulu that is available to watch. And Preacher, there's two seasons of, and another season is about to start filming in like a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot going on.
I wanted to ask you also about your mom. You guys go back and forth on Twitter, and she's pretty funny on Twitter.
Yes.
There was something that you and Billy Eichner did, and she got upset with Billy for...
he told people I was dead and made me go around with him and tell people I was dead, and then I would reveal myself to not be dead.
Yeah.
It was a bummer, though. It actually bummed me out for a few days, I'll be totally honest, because most people did not give a that I was dead. they were pretty okay with it. Gotcha. Like, there was a few people who it seemed to upset, but most people by and large were A, not surprised, and B, not upset.
Well, thanks again for being here today. Congrats on the movie, and come back again soon.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.